Welcome to the Global Gaming Business Podcast, where you hear about the business of the casino entertainment industry from the people who make it happen. I'm Roger Gross, the publisher of Global Gaming Business, and this week the Global Gaming Business Podcast features an interview with Virginia McDowell, the president and CEO of Isle of Capri Casinos, as she discusses the success and growth of her company this year. Like most gaming companies, Isle of Capri Casinos has endured a difficult few years. Virginia McDowell, the company's president and CEO, joined the company just prior to the economic downturn and explains how changes implemented during that time have actually benefited the bottom line. And with two new licenses in Missouri and Pennsylvania, Isle has a growth story to tell. She also talks about branding, social networking, and Isle's unique corporate culture. She met with me at the Isle of Capri offices in St. Louis in June. So you can make a killing. Virginia McDowell, thanks for joining us on the Global Gaming Business Podcast. It's been a while since we were able to catch up, so I'm really looking forward to this discussion.
As am I.
Hey, you've recently been promoted to president and CEO of the company. How has that changed your responsibilities?
I don't know that it changes tremendously. Jim Perry and I have worked together, or had worked together, for 3 decades.
Right.
You know, when you've been together that long, you kind of get to the point where you finish each other's sentences.
Right.
When both of us joined the company, me in the position of president and COO in July of 2007, and Jim as a member of the board, the first thing that we worked on was developing a strategic plan for the company. Company had just come out of a phase where they had invested a significant amount of capital that they really weren't getting a very good return on, and we realized that we needed to, you know, develop a different path for the company going forward. So Jim and I worked on the development of strategic plan, which we implemented early in 2008. The board accepted it. Bernie Goldstein, our late founder, was very comfortable with what we had done and indicated at that point that he was willing to step down as CEO, which gave the ability for Jim to step in.
Right.
So that plan that we put together in 2008 really is the foundation or the infrastructure for what we want to do as a company going forward. And we believe that that's the best path and the best plan.
Mm-hmm.
Of course, we implemented that plan, you know, 4 or 5 months before the economy tanked.
Right, sure, of course, right.
So,
good
so
timing.
So then it was kind of, okay, plan B.
Right.
In 2010, as we started to see the economy recover a little bit and we saw consumer confidence recovering, we went back to that plan in 2008. That we did in 2008 and said, you know, what do we need to do to update this? And basically looked at, you know, what we call the new normal.
Mm-hmm.
But we still believe that you know, reinvesting in our existing portfolio and looking for organic growth opportunities to continue to generate and increase free cash flow is the best plan for the company. So although Jim has retired as CEO and now steps into the role of executive chairman, the plan that we have worked on together putting in place it's now my responsibility to execute against.
Great. Well, let's talk about some of the recent activity. You've been doing a lot of things recently. You won licenses in Missouri and Pennsylvania, agreed to sell licenses in Louisiana and Iowa. Let's walk through each. Let's start with Missouri and explain, you know, how Isle plays a role in each of them. In Missouri, It's a wholly owned facility, correct?
Yeah. Cape Girardeau is an extremely exciting opportunity for us. And in both the case of Cape Girardeau and in Nemacolin, just a great opportunity for the company because we're getting in at a very competitive multiple for both of those properties.
Right.
And it gives us the ability to build a flagship Isle in Cape Girardeau and a flagship Lady Luck in Nemacolin. So strategically, it fits in great with what we call our house of brands,
right,
and you know, the development of our internal portfolio. Cape Girardeau is a very exciting opportunity because we're obviously headquartered in Missouri. We already have 3 properties here. So when the last license became available and the process began to open up, we were solicited or had incoming expressions of interest from just about anyone in the state that had an idea.
Sure.
Because we're obviously headquartered here, we're licensed here, we understand the state, and you know, most of these people looked at us as you know, an easy path forward.
Right.
We kind of looked at it a little bit differently because we do know the state mm-hmm. as well as we do. We looked at where can you maximize the revenue stream? Where does it right. make the most sense from a competitive perspective? It was our belief that the two major markets, Kansas City and St. Louis, obviously have capacity issues. Mm-hmm. I mean, you already have, you know, significant properties in both those markets, probably right. not a lot of growth and more likely cannibalization. Mm-hmm. So we kind of looked outstate, which, you know, we have two properties, one in Boonville and one in Caruthersville mm-hmm. that are in, you know, relatively remote locations. And both do very well, you know, in those locations. So we kind of looked outstate mm-hmm. and said, where's the best opportunity? Cape Girardeau, a lot of people don't realize, is the largest city between St. Louis and Memphis.
Okay.
So a very underserved market. It's mm-hmm. really, you know, the town is only served by Metropolis in Illinois and by our Lady Luck property in Caruthersville, the nearest of which, both of those two, is an hour away.
Mm-hmm.
So it's a great opportunity to get into an underserved market. Cape Girardeau folk have been wonderful to work with, mayor, city council, just about every municipal and civic body that we have talked to, every fraternal organization.
Mm-hmm.
Jill Haynes, our director of corporate communications, Paul Keller, Dick Meister, our corporate development team, I think have probably spoken to, you know, civic or fraternal groups, you know, dozens and dozens of
right.
times as we have gone through this process, building relationships with the local community and basically talking about our vision. Cape has a wonderful downtown area, old downtown Cape, and what we're looking at is basically building the kind of facility that is, you know, pretty much at the other end of the main street in
mm-hmm.
Cape Girardeau. Building a facility that will turn a, you know, 2-hour visit into Cape into a 6-hour visit
mm-hmm.
into Cape so that they visit our property and you know, then go down and take
right.
advantage
mm-hmm.
of the shops and the restaurants. And it is, I guess adorable is not the right word
yeah.
for a city.
right.
But it's very quaint, mm-hmm. and I've had a lot of fun. You know, I'm an antique
sure.
you know, buff,
mm-hmm.
and I've had a lot of fun running around in the antique stores
right.
down there, and I'm sure a lot of other people will mm-hmm. as well.
And it's a historic river town.
Historic river town. Our site is a great site. It's inside the levee.
Mm-hmm.
So even with all the flooding that we've experienced
right.
in Missouri and Mississippi over the last few months, you know, we remain relatively dry there.
Yeah.
Don't have to get, you know, the Corps permits and approvals mm-hmm. and all of the things that, you know, generally lengthen the amount of time it takes for
right.
you to get a property like that up and running. So we are on schedule.
Mm-hmm.
We are in the process of making final determinations as far as our general contractor, and we've announced mm-hmm. some of our subs, and you know, so we're ready to rock and roll.
In Pennsylvania, in Nemacolin and Springs, you're not the owner but the manager.
Mm-hmm.
How does this work financially for the company, and are you the license holder, or are they holding
well,
the license?
Well, essentially, it's a partnership with the Hardy family.
Okay.
The Hardy family are known nationally for as being the owners of 84 Lumber.
Mm-hmm.
Joe Hardy and his daughter Maggie Hardy McGurko, when they were looking at the opportunity that was presented for the last license in Pennsylvania,
mm-hmm.
and again, this is a Category 3 resort license,
mm-hmm.
so, you know, very different than what exists right,
right
now. The Hardy family traditionally has liked to do things their own,
mm-hmm.
so they've never really had an outside partner to work with them on any of their various business ventures.
Right.
Maggie operates Nemacolin. This is you know her baby.
Yeah.
And so they were really looking for somebody. They recognized that gaming is very different.
Mm-hmm.
You can't do that on your own.
Sure.
You really need to, you know, to have a subject matter expert as a partner. And they looked at a lot of different companies, but felt most comfortable with Isle because we kind of had, you know, the same entrepreneurial spirit that they did in some ways, but, you know, the same ethics, you
mm-hmm.
know, in many others.
Sure.
So in our initial meetings and when we talked to them, there was just a level of comfort there in terms of we both look at the way we treat our customers the
mm-hmm.
same way, our employees the same way.
Right.
You know, honor, ethics, integrity, the things that are important to both of
mm-hmm.
us, you know, it was clearly evident that it was a good partnership. So essentially, they had, the Nemacolin folks, had anticipated that they might be interested in applying for the license when it originally had become available. That was before table games were added and when there was still
mm-hmm.
some question as far as the amenity rule.
Right.
And they eventually made a decision that they weren't going to pursue it, mm-hmm. but had built, you know, a building as part of the Nemacolin facility that would be the perfect place for a casino. So it's kind of plug and play for us. Mm-hmm. I mean, this is a building. We've got to bump it out a little bit, you know, just to add some office space and you know, a few amenities. But we believe once we get the nod from Pennsylvania, we can be up and running in about 9 months.
Really?
It's our build out. We're going to spend about $50 million, you know, fitting the building out. And then we have a contract with the Hardys that we basically pay them a licensing fee and then, you know, get the EBITDA beyond that.
Okay, great. And I understand this is the building was already fit and ready to go.
It's like I said, plug and play.
Yeah.
And the funny thing was is that he originally, Joe Hardy had originally designed it as kind of a Cabela or a Bass Pro Shop type operation. And then made the decision that he was going to change it into more of a family amenity for the resort. And so they kind of turned it into a Dave and Buster's type facility.
Okay.
So a lot of the lighting and the wiring and infrastructure that you would need for, you know, a casino is now there.
Right.
So it really is a relatively easy conversion for us. One of the things that we wanted to do, because Nemacolin is an amazing 5-star resort and, you know, has won, you know, just about every, whether it's hotel award or culinary award in the business, we wanted to make sure that what we introduced as our flagship Lady Luck was on par or equal to the level of fit and fixture that exists at Nemacolin right now. So our design team, Paul Keller, and the various people that come up with these, you know, very creative solutions and ideas, looked to Frank Lloyd Wright for inspiration. One of his most famous houses, Falling Rock, is not far from Nemacolin. And so kind of the creative story behind Lady Luck Nemacolin will be that it's kind of Frank Lloyd Wright's workshop. So it was kind of when he was sitting there and thinking about the things that he would include in Falling Rock, we have a little bit of this and a little bit of that, architecture, you know, stained glass, you know, whatever it might be. So it'll be a lot of fun.
And it looks like a beautiful resort. I mean, the building is spectacular when you see it in pictures. I haven't seen it in person.
It's absolutely amazing, and I'm probably going to get in trouble saying this, but I'm a Philadelphia girl. And, you know, we used to joke all the time that if you live in Pittsburgh, you don't think there's anything east of Harrisburg.
Right.
And if you live in Philly, you don't think there's anything west of Harrisburg. So when the opportunity to have the conversation with Nemacolin first surfaced, I had never heard of the resort before.
Yeah.
And went out there and was just absolutely blown away. You know, they have created this amazing wonderland out there of a variety of different hotel options, you know, PGA championship golf courses, multiple.
Right. Yeah.
Not only a spa, but a pet spa, probably one of the nicest in the United States. You know, a ski resort, a shooting range, you know, everything that you could possibly think of, and then some. You know, Maggie and the general manager of the resort, Chris Plummer, like to say that you know, the only thing that they don't have is an ocean, and Joe Hardy's trying to figure out a way to get one. So, you know, we were very gratified that the Pennsylvania Gaming Control Board made the decision based on the enabling legislation to award the license to what we do believe is a first-class facility where gaming would truly be an amenity to a well-established existing resort. The resort attracted customers from, I think, 45 states last year and a couple of foreign countries, and we think that this will help bring additional people to the state of Pennsylvania.
Okay. Explain to me what the regs are these days with these resorts, casinos, in terms of who your customer can be. At one point, it was you had to be a guest of the resort. Is that, how has that changed?
It's a work in progress, and it is something that we are working with the regulators on right now in terms of establishing what the actual program will be. There are some pieces of this that are inherent to that in terms of you do have to be not a guest of the resort, but a patron of the resort. So, for example, if you are attending a wedding or a convention where you eat dinner or so on and so forth, you know, you should be able to gain access to the casino. But the actual mechanics of that is what we're working on with them right now.
Okay. And there could be a lot of iterations on how that's interpreted.
Yes, and I'm sure that as I said, it's a work in progress.
Right.
And you know, it is our belief that the regulators are willing to work with us on something that is workable. Mm-hmm. The last thing in the world that you want is to have, you know, hurdles or barriers to entry that frustrate people.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we've certainly seen this, you know, in the past when we were dealing with, for example, loss limits in Missouri.
Right.
You know, when you make it hard for someone to enter your casino, mm-hmm. you know, the likelihood that they change their mind and walk away is much higher.
And what I'm thinking of is the problems they've been having recently at the Greenbrier in West Virginia,
right.
which is kind of that situation, a historic resort, and they put a casino in there and you have to be somehow a guest again. And apparently they're not doing nearly as well as they thought they were going to do.
I think part of the issue with the Greenbrier, though, is, you know, the Greenbrier is in a very remote location.
It is very remote, yeah.
And really, I mean, it's not like there is a surrounding community,
right.
and it's not like they have a lot of people that are coming there for other things
right.
that happen at the resort. So if you're there, you're probably
sure.
staying
right.
there.
Yeah.
At Nemacolin, you can be coming for golf, mm-hmm. you can be coming for skiing, you can be coming for conventions or
right.
weddings or whatever it might be, and that attracts a lot of people beyond just the people that are staying in the hotels and the other various housing options.
Okay. Let's move to something you just announced last week. You sold one of your licenses or agreed to sell one of your licenses in Lake Charles and relocated to Bossier City. Explain how that should work.
Well, that is pending right now.
Right.
We essentially have an LOI with a company named Paradise.
Mm-hmm.
You know, since I joined the company 4 years ago, one of the things that we've been talking about is monetizing the second license in Lake Charles. We've looked at a variety of different options. We looked at relocating it ourselves
mm-hmm.
Based on the approved bodies of water that you can
right.
locate casinos on in Louisiana. And we just never found the right opportunity,
mm-hmm.
you know, for us to do it ourselves. And so, you know, we've been looking for the right opportunity to potentially transact it. And you know, we felt that this was a good one.
Mm-hmm.
We are working, as I said, with a company that intends to relocate it upon approval to Bossier City.
Mm-hmm.
In Louisiana, you have to have parish approval. So
right.
there's a referendum that's scheduled this fall.
Mm-hmm.
And so, you know, they basically have exclusive right. Until they get on the other side of the referendum.
Okay. How's that going to work for you, though? Because you've got a property already in Bossier City. So that adds... Oh, no?
No.
Okay.
No,
we
sold that.
That's right.
Gone.
Right. Okay, so you're not going to be competing with yourself.
No, we wouldn't be competing with ourselves.
Okay.
So it's
that makes more sense. That's
yeah, it's about. Actually, it's a good situation for us.
Right.
You know, but as I said, you know, it's going to require the approval of the parish,
right?
And you know, the Louisiana regulators. Although you know, we have been in contact with them as we've been
mm-hmm.
going through this process to make sure that they were okay with us at least proceeding at this point of the transaction.
Now, it also makes sense in Lake Charles because there's some pending increased competition there with Mojito Point,
right?
Would you need to increase some of your positions in the meantime in Lake Charles, or do you have enough
well,
on that existing boat?
Remember, in Louisiana, you're limited to,
right.
you know,
mm-hmm.
35,000 square feet.
Right.
And there are different ways of calculating
mm-hmm.
what is gaming space and not
right.
gaming space. So we do believe that on the Grand Palais, which is the larger
right.
of our two boats, we do believe that we have the ability to reconfigure the floor within Louisiana regulations to add some units. We would be relocating our poker room. It
mm-hmm.
wouldn't be as big as the poker room that we have on the Crown,
but
we would be relocating our poker room. And we do believe that, you know, we will have the ability to transfer some of those positions.
Okay. In Iowa, you're selling Rhythm City in Davenport. Have you reached an agreement to do that? I know you're still negotiating, but...
We have an LOI
uh-huh.
That we announced a couple of weeks ago. The Iowa Racing and Gaming Commission had asked for us to provide an update
mm-hmm.
At the June meeting after the annual licensing hearing that happened earlier this year, which we did.
Mm-hmm.
We told them that, as we have indicated... to the mayor and to the you know the various elected and appointed officials in the city, that we would continue to work with them on finding a solution that that works for everybody. And this is certainly an indication that, that you know we have we are committed to that obligation that we made. You know, so the MSEG, who has been named as the city's preferred developer, has 60 days from the day that you know we announced it to complete their due diligence, and we'll see.
Okay. And, but you still have a boat in Bettendorf, so you still will serve the Quad Cities.
Yes, we'll still be in the Quad Cities at our facility in Bettendorf.
Is there an overall strategy behind all these moves, or is it just that these things happen to come up?
Well, I think in the case of well, yeah, there is an overall strategy, and it kind of gets back to our strategic plan that it has been our intent for the last several years to upgrade our asset base. And we certainly believe, based on getting the last licenses in Missouri and in Pennsylvania, and being able to build flagship properties for each of our brands, certainly gives us the ability to do that. I think, as far as Louisiana is concerned, it was opportunistic. You know, in that the opportunity presented itself to to do this transaction that really won't impact our operations all that much, based on the trailing revenue and EBITDA for that particular facility. And in the Quad Cities, it's a difficult situation. The mayor and the elected officials there have a vision, of what they want for that market.
Right.
At the point that we first started having conversations with them a few years ago, we kind of pointed out that based on the expansion of gaming in Iowa, it was already a declining market.
Right.
Faced additional competition that we knew was going to be happening when Jumer's expanded across the river.
Right.
And that we just didn't believe, as a publicly traded company, that we would get the requisite return on our investment to build a $150 million land-based facility.
Right.
The time to do that would have been 20 years ago. Mm-hmm. At the point that the old president was transacted.
Right.
Isle was the company that the city went to and said, "Please help us save these jobs and help us save this facility." Mm-hmm. We did.
Yeah.
We believe that we've been a good corporate citizen in the Quad Cities, and that we have reinvested, but we just couldn't justify $150 million in a declining market.
Yep.
So,
no question.
We had committed to the mayor that we would cooperate in the process of them finding someone that may be interested in doing this, as long as we could transact our property at a commercially reasonable multiple.
Sure, absolutely. Interesting development in Biloxi last week with Boyd Gaming buying the IP down there. Obviously, one of your most important properties down there. Does that impact you at all?
I think we're going to have to wait and see what happens. I think that when a property right now, IP operates with a very entrepreneurial spirit, and as a one-off, that's obviously understandable. So. There are some pros and cons, when you bring a much larger organization in. Boyd obviously has the ability to bring their marketing platform in, and they obviously have the ability to, in some cases, bring their air programs in,
right.
and so on and so forth. Based on the public statements they have made, they're looking at this as the opportunity to take their existing, database customers and send them to what is actually a very nice resort.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
On the other hand, they have publicly stated that, there are some economies of scale and they're going to be looking to make some changes, and we'll just have to see what they are.
Okay.
To the extent that customers like that entrepreneurial spirit and like what exists as opposed to what I will call a more corporate approach, we'll see.
Okay. How is that property operating now? It's been about a year since the bridge reopened to the east.
Our property,
your property, right?
It's an interesting kind of conundrum for us.
Mm-hmm.
When I'm out talking to investors or analysts, what I like to say is it's kind of a good news bad news situation.
Mm-hmm.
The good news is that after Katrina, we were the first property that was up and operating.
Mm-hmm.
So we kind of benefited from that on the front end.
Right.
By being able to take advantage of the business as it returned to town. But we moved our gaming operation into our convention space,
right.
into our ballrooms
right.
and meeting space, and it's still there.
Yeah.
So we have effectively 700 rooms with no infrastructure to be able to support those rooms from a convention perspective or player parties or
right.
anything else. So, you know, what we really need to do to kind of maximize that property at this point is to find ways to be able to restore some of that convention space or introduce convention space.
Right.
So that we can better serve those rooms midweek.
Sure.
We have a lot of ideas in terms of how to do that, but that market has been struggling.
Right.
And, you know, you're painfully aware of Atlantic City and, you know, a couple of years ago when I was a panelist at the Southern Gaming Summit, you know, one of the things that, that we were talking about on the State of the Industry panel was is that Biloxi was kind of a mini Atlantic City. You know, you basically had no infrastructure really beyond what the casinos had rebuilt post-Katrina. You know, so all of the things that, that you know, the that people used to go visit the Mississippi Gulf Coast for, all the little putt-putt courses and restaurants and so on, and so they're not there anymore. So there really hasn't been any private investment, very little private investment beyond what gaming companies have invested, and Biloxi's pretty much become a pure-play gaming market. So we're now all kind of fighting for the same outer market customers, which are very inefficient marketing dollars. Our you know, what we call our MAR, our gaming cost of sales, very high, higher than any of our other properties, just because of the competition for the customers in the market. You've had expansion of gaming in Florida, which impacts the Pensacola market, which is a very important feeder market for us. And then the ongoing craziness in Alabama, you know, which we're benefiting from right now, but who knows what happens down the road. So, you know, it's a tough market. And when we look at what we need to do at that property in order to basically, you know, help to really improve our performance there, we've had trouble justifying the level of investment.
And then you see, you know, increased capacity with Margaritaville being approved and our friend Keith Crosby opening an expansion down the block from you. Those are they're all difficult.
They're all things that you basically have to absorb. Now, having said that, very, very proud of the team in Biloxi because even given these very, very you know, tough competitive situations and a compromised physical plant in some ways, they've done everything that they can to leverage that and maximize it. They do a great job in terms of creating excitement at the property and having fun and doing a lot of wonderful things from a marketing perspective. They just won all kinds of awards for, you know, best marketing programs or promotions and so on and so forth. And as we as a company have dealt with the impact of the economy over the last few years, we have implemented what we call profit enhancement programs at each of our properties, and they have done a phenomenal job of being able to take cost out of that operation without impacting you know, the experience that we create for our guests. As a matter of fact, you know, we continue to survey our customers, and actually our scores in Biloxi are fantastic. You know, we're very proud of what they've been able to do.
Well, that kind of like leads into my next question about the finances. You know, you shored up the finances of this company over the last several years, you know, by cutting costs and creating efficiencies and things of that nature. But there really hasn't been much of a corresponding bump in the stock price. Do you think Wall Street understands, you know, the financial changes you've made?
Well, I think there's a few things that you have to consider. You know, first is, to your point, we have worked very hard to improve our capital structure during this time period, not just what we have done most recently in terms of, you know, pushing our various maturities out, you know, to as far away as you know, 2019, but also the equity offering that we did earlier this year. During the you know, kind of the teeth of the recession, these profit enhancement, you know, programs that we put in place, we were able to pull $30-40 million out of cost of the company between, you know, the properties and the corporate office, and in the same time period pay down over $300 million in debt. You know, so we're really focused on reducing our leverage during that time period. But again, you know, we've kind of looked at it from the perspective of you don't want to cut so deep and so far that it negatively impacts your customer experience. You know, without naming names, we saw some of our competitors that did that, and we were the beneficiary of it. Because when our customers were holding us to a higher standard, when they were sitting there and saying, my leisure dollar is now more precious than it has ever been, and they were sitting there and saying, I can only make one choice, you know, where I used to be able to sit there and say, hey, I'm going to go out three or four weekends a month. Now I'm only going to go one. Where am I going to go? We believe that the relationships that we created with our customers and the value that we provided for them during the Great Recession really will help us on the other side.
Right.
I think that the question that you're asking is, does Wall Street recognize that?
Right.
And it's hard to measure that. That's a little bit of an intangible. I think that our leverage has been an overhang on the company. I think that you know what we've been able to do in terms of refinancing the company and the equity infusion, you know, serves to reduce a little bit of that overhang.
Right.
But I think that you know people are still kind of looking at us at this point as you know pure play, you know, consumer recovery company, and
sure.
because everybody is still kind of waiting to see what's going to happen right now. You know, we saw, you know, earlier this year, we saw, you know, a couple of good quarters, you know, a few
right.
good months. And now if you look mm-hmm. at the, you know, the results as they're trickling in, it's kind of stagnant again.
Right.
And I
mm-hmm.
think that, you know, people are just waiting for a clearer sign of a sustained recovery.
Mm-hmm. But you think, you know, once they get that sign, the changes you've made, the fact that you didn't cut to the bone during
right.
the recession will help you out.
Well, I think there's a couple of things to consider. The research that we did back in 2008 on our customers, and I think it's very similar to the other regional operators. The research that we did is you know the vast majority of our customers are you know what we would refer to as baby boomers
right.
or older.
Mm-hmm.
Our average customer is you know a 55 to 60 year old woman who likes to play slots.
Mm-hmm.
You know if you look at any of the published surveys that are done, whether it's the American Gaming Association State of the States or the Harris Consumer Research that they do,
right.
you know we are very similar to them. You know, in terms of, you know, who our customers are, you know, what their income is, and so on and so forth. But those customers that are the backbone of Isle's business, those customers were sitting on 70% of the wealth in the United States
right.
when we did our research in 2008. That hasn't changed.
Mm-hmm.
You know, on a percentage basis, it's going to be a little bit smaller just because of, you know, people's 401ks became
sure,
101ks.
Right, yeah.
But I think that what you saw over the last few years is not so much that our customers were impacted by the unemployment rate, but when you look down the block and either your neighbor or your son or your daughter or someone at church or whatever it might be is now unemployed, you tend to contract your spending.
Mm-hmm.
And so I think people were trying to preserve wealth during
right.
this time period. And they are looking for, you know, signs of a sustained recovery
mm-hmm.
before they start spending again. You know, one of my board members, we were having a conversation recently, and he said, you know, it's kind of like if you think about when you're driving down the highway and you see a police car on the side. You know, you slow down, you put the brakes on
right.
until you can't see the police car in your rearview
right.
mirror anymore.
Right.
And then you're
right.
back to 75 again, you know, or
and
whatever.
We're still seeing that police car.
We're still seeing
there.
All the police
yeah.
cars.
Right. Yeah.
That's exactly what it is. We're
yeah.
still seeing the police car. And until the police car is in the rearview mirror, I think that you know, people are basically just being a little bit more conservative
right.
Than they would be. I do believe because... we are very fortunate in that you know the baby boomers are aging into our product.
Mm-hmm.
In other words, you know we're not skydiving companies.
Right. Yeah. Right.
you know we're the kind of thing that you can go do with a bunch of your friends.
Mm-hmm.
You know, similar to you know going and playing cards or bowling or whatever it
right.
might be. You know, it's something that anyone can do, regardless of kind of their age or you know their physical capacity.
Right.
So they're kind of aging into what we offer, and I think that we as an industry do a great job of providing value for the customers who have made a purchasing decision that you know gaming is something that they want to do.
Right.
Certainly, if you look at the AGA research and the number of you know consumers nationwide, I think it's somewhere about 90% that you know people basically indicate, hey, we think that that's acceptable either for us or for someone else to do.
Right. Let's talk about your dual brand strategy.
You know,
how are you positioning this? I mean, it sounds like At first, I thought Lady Luck would be maybe the lower end of the brand, but if you're going to put it in Nemacolin Springs, it's not going to be lower end. So how are you differentiating the two?
You know, in very broad strokes, if it floats, it's a Lady Luck.
Yeah. Okay.
And if it's more amenity driven, it's an Isle.
Okay.
But again, that's in very broad strokes because, to your point, Lady Luck doesn't, or Nemacolin doesn't float.
Right.
But because of the amenities that are at the resort, okay, we're not offering them their resort amenities, and so we looked at it as being a great way to add, you know, kind of a fun brand to, you know, what exists in terms of the amenities at Nemacolin. And again, you know, when I say broad strokes, you know, technically Cape Girardeau floats.
Right.
Because of Missouri regulations. But you know, generally Lady Locks are the first generation riverboat facilities, and the Isles are more either hotel, convention space, you know, restaurant, spa, you know, whatever it may
right.
be. And that's kind of the way that we're looking at building the platform going forward.
Okay. So Lady Luck is going to be kind of a fun gambling experience, pretty much just that, whereas Isle is going to have a lot more amenities and things like that.
Yeah, I mean, and part of the reason that we did this is, again, going back to the strategic plan that we developed, you know, part of the problem in terms of communicating who we were as a company is, you know, we had just built Waterloo, we had just built Pompano and opened them in 2007. And, you know, we had a lot of people, whether it was the investment community or even our employees, that basically were sitting there and questioning and saying, well, you know, when is XYZ property going to become an Isle?
Right.
Well, you know, the reality of the situation is that if you look at some of our first generation riverboat properties and you look at the return that we get on the invested capital there, these are tremendous assets.
Right.
And what we have to do is we basically have to build the experience to what the physical plan is. And when you talk to our customers, and again, we've been doing research for, you know, a decade
sure,
now,
right.
going out and talking to, you know, all levels of the database and talking to the competition, you know, it comes back time and time again that they're really looking for a clean, safe, friendly, fun gaming experience.
Right.
So if you look at a smaller market, for example, Marquette, Iowa, where we have rebranded our property a Lady Luck there, you know, what our customers are telling us is we want great service, we want, you know, good value in terms of pricing on the casino floor, so, you know, low hold. We want great entertainment, and we want to be able to get a cold beer or whatever the beverage of choice in your jurisdiction is.
Okay.
And as long as we can deliver on those things, when you are the only or one of the only entertainment amenities in your given community, you know, if you can go on a Friday or Saturday night and listen to a great band and get a great burger and have, you know, good return on the capital that you invest in your gaming experience, you'll have fun.
Okay.
And that's what Lady Luck is supposed to be.
Okay. How does this impact your marketing strategies at the individual properties? But first, kind of explain what kind of guidance and or control you exercise at the corporate level.
Well, it's interesting. Originally, we had, when we were talking about investing in the existing portfolio and looking for organic growth opportunities in 2008, we had a much more aggressive capital spend planned. And then the economy intervened.
Right.
And so a lot of what we have done, I believe, very successfully in terms of launching and introducing those brands, we have done through marketing dollars and not through making significant, you know, changes to the physical
right.
plans.
Mm-hmm.
So, again, we have the ability now to build the flagship properties for both of our brands, and that will really help us over the next couple of years to define the personalities
okay.
of those brands and kind of what the brand identity or the brand DNA
right.
is. But again, it doesn't matter if it's an Isle or a Lady Luck. It is a clean, safe, friendly, fun experience.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, if you look at the programs that we have created, the promotions that we've created, you know, our creative as we've introduced the brands, they are very similar in creating that kind of fun experience for customers. One of the other things that we've really been working on, and again, it was because our capital was relatively limited over the last couple of years, is what are the kind of things that we can do at the properties in both brands that add value to the customers that are not capital intensive. So we have really been working on introducing our proprietary restaurant concepts. Mm-hmm. So Otis and Henry's restaurant and the Lone Wolf Bar and Grill. And we've really had a lot of fun building our Jester's Jam concert series.
Okay.
So we took, you know, kind of that same, you know, when you have 15 properties across the United States, you know, you can buy acts and route them.
Mm-hmm.
You certainly know the entertainment business.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that we kind of were approaching that as a company in a very decentralized fashion, and
mm-hmm.
we really weren't leveraging what we could on a national basis or really taking advantage of the economies of
right.
scale. So as part of our house of brands,
mm-hmm.
we branded it the Jester's Jam Concert Series, and it has been phenomenally successful across the United States.
Yeah.
You know, really a lot of fun with the creative and,
mm-hmm.
and T-shirts and posters and all of this. But it also gave us the ability to really use what I believe is a pretty aggressive social media platform
mm-hmm.
that we have as a company and kind of take that to the next level.
Okay.
So we've had a lot of fun, again, building those relationships and interacting with our customers because of the social media platform that we've
right.
built.
Okay. Well, that leads me into the next question.
You know, funny you should mention it.
I had a discussion with Bill Hornbuckle at MGM and you know, one of the biggest companies in the business, and I asked him the same question, what do you do with social media? And he pretty much said, we throw everything up against the wall and see what sticks.
See what sticks.
I mean, now you seem to have hired somebody who really has some experience and knows what this is all about at the corporate level. What's been your experience?
Well, I think it was more organic that I think that we had a very, very talented corporate marketing team to begin
mm-hmm.
with who just got it.
Yeah.
I mean, they just understood that being social is an opportunity for you to interact with your customers.
Mm-hmm.
And it doesn't necessarily have to be expensive. So it's kind of, you know, when we have the social media debate, it is what is the return on investment, and it's very hard to measure and it's very hard to quantify. Well, that's true if you spend a tremendous amount of money getting there.
Mm-hmm.
But we just did it as part of our overall marketing program. So just as we talk about marketing segmentation and the kind of promotions that we run, you know, and so on and so forth, we basically incorporated social media into
mm-hmm.
this. So all of our 15 properties have Twitter accounts. They regularly tweet. About half of them now have Facebook accounts.
Mm-hmm.
They use them for different purposes.
Mm-hmm.
We use them for, it was interesting because when we first introduced our Twitter campaign at Lake Charles, I think we sold like 50 hotel rooms in a relatively short period of time, which are 50 hotel rooms that
right.
we would not have sold,
mm-hmm.
you know, were it not for the fact that we were having this immediate dialogue.
Right.
You know, so direct mail, you put it in the mail, you wait
right.
for a response, and you know, 3 or 4 days later, if you're
mm-hmm.
lucky, you hear something. In Twitter, it can be 10 minutes.
Right.
So we do that. You know, we basically just, you know, it's a way for us to have fun with our customers.
Sure.
We also use social media to communicate with our employees. So for our CSA Smile courtesy program, we
mm-hmm.
have a very active dialogue going on with our properties from all, with our employees from all 15 properties that can post on our CSA Smile Facebook page, and they do,
mm-hmm.
And also with our Community ACES Charitable Foundation that we're very, very active in, and all of our properties, you know, when they're doing something in the community, are posting the pictures on our Community ACES wall, which is open to the public. So right now, the two big community fundraisers that we're working on a national basis are the Cystic Fibrosis Great Strides Walk and Relay for Life for the
mm-hmm.
American Cancer Society.
Okay.
And you know, our properties have the ability to, you know, through our Community ACES page, kind of compete with each other
mm-hmm.
and have fun, and it's really interesting. So, you know, one of the things that we talk about in terms of social media is what are you trying to achieve
right.
with it? For us, it was a way to integrate our messaging and continue to build the relationships with those customers. We do sell tickets. We do sell buffets. We do sell rooms.
Right.
Okay. But we believe that this is just kind of the tip of the iceberg.
Mm-hmm.
And when we look at our opportunities going forward, we actually just very recently have finished some upgrades to our corporate website that will give us the ability to go mobile.
Okay.
And we believe that that's kind of the next opportunity
right.
for us as an organization.
No question about that. kind of, again, leads me to the next question. Corporate culture is always a buzz in any industry. What do you believe you have established here at Isle, or are you still in the process of developing that?
Well, I was very fortunate to join a company, and it was one of the reasons that I made the decision to join this company. You know, Bernie Goldstein founded this company based on honor and ethics and integrity and being a good corporate citizen, you know, making sure that you're not only giving back to the communities where you are licensed and operate and do business, also obviously the states, but that you create the kind of culture where your employees do really truly feel that they're part of a family. And I think that Bernie himself just embodied that.
He did.
And we miss him every day, but he left an amazing legacy.
Mm-hmm.
So I was very fortunate in that I got to build on that. You know, mm-hmm. got to take that infrastructure and kind of build on that. And I still do believe that we are a company. If you go back to Katrina,
mm-hmm.
The way that we treated our employees, the way that we took care of them, the way that we handled it. If you look at what has just happened most recently as far as the floods,
mm-hmm.
you know, we were impacted in three states. We paid our employees.
Yeah.
You know, we kept them on the payroll. And not only did we pay our employees, but we made them available to help with projects, whether it was stray rescue or,
mm-hmm.
or you know, in one case, teaching the National Guard how to fill sandbags.
Really?
That was amusing. Or donating, you know, food and freezers to, you know, local shelters and or, you know, having a you know, one hell of a crawfish boil because,
mm-hmm.
you know, the food was going to go bad anyway.
Right.
So I think that is, you know, part of the DNA of this company.
Mm-hmm.
When Bernie died, we kind of took the opportunity to take that to the next level in his honor,
mm-hmm.
as his legacy, and introduce our Community ACES Charitable Foundation, and it has been amazingly successful and just so well received by our employees, who now have a more official conduit for their activities.
Right.
So we do time away from work. If you look, for example, at our corporate office, you know, we have a special parking space in the
mm-hmm.
garage. We have no assigned parking for anyone in the company except one spot for the Community ACE of the Bottom,
okay.
which just reinforces how important,
right.
you know, participating in charities is to us as an organization. But I think that we have over 100 or 200,
yeah.
200 events that we will work on,
mm-hmm.
you know, as a company in the
right.
course of a year. And this is all kinds of organizations. So, you know, right now we are working with everyone from Habitat to, you know, for Humanity to the Red Cross to, you know, name your local organization,
mm-hmm.
Boy Scouts, Girl Scouts, you know, whatever it may be. What we're working on now is actually surveying our employees across the enterprise and asking them to help us choose the charities that are
mm-hmm.
most important to them, so that we make sure that to the extent that we either provide, you know, financial support or you know, volunteer support,
mm-hmm.
That we're doing it based on the organizations that are most important to our employees. So I think that's part of our culture. I think that an amazing tribute to our culture is our CSA Smile
mm-hmm.
Program. We introduced this as a proprietary courtesy program a couple of years ago. We basically view courtesy very different from service,
mm-hmm.
and the reason why is, as we believe that employees are not always in total control of the service that they provide.
Mm-hmm.
So if you think of,
sure.
you know, typical casino on a Saturday night, if two people call in the cage, you know, and it's a very busy Saturday night, and, you know, you're sitting there and essentially pulling triple duty,
mm-hmm.
you're going to have a line
right.
no matter what happens.
Right.
You know, the question is, when the person finally gets to the window after they've been waiting in line, are you sitting there and growling at them,
right.
or are you sitting there and apologizing and saying, I know that you've waited in line for a long time, we're very busy tonight, because it totally diffuses the situation.
Sure, right.
So to us, giving employees the ability to empowering them,
mm-hmm.
basically to earn bonuses based on the courtesy that they are in control of in
right.
every situation, was something that was very valuable to them. Kind of put it a different way. I made a speech recently, and I pointed this out to a group of St. Louis business executives, and they were rather surprised. I said, you know, during the recession, we didn't have the ability to make the significant capital investments in our company because of wanting to make certain that we stayed, obviously, you know, within our covenants and so on and so forth. But we invested in our employees. Mm-hmm. We spent several million dollars in bonuses for our employee on achieving these courtesy levels. Mm-hmm. We started with a baseline, you know, of 58%, so almost 6 out of every 10 times the employees showed the requisite behaviors. We're now over 90. Mm-hmm. And have had just amazing successes along the way. But what's interesting is how our employees have embraced this. Mm-hmm. They tell us that they not only employ or deploy these behaviors at work, but they bring it home.
Yeah.
You know, they take CSA Smile into the community, mm-hmm. and into their homes, and they just have a tremendous amount of fun. So we have general manager challenging general manager. We have employees challenging employees. You can see the results of this. It kind of goes back to the social media question, but we have over 75 videos posted on YouTube,
yeah.
and some of them are CSA Smile yeah. related and are absolutely hysterical. Mm-hmm. Our employees have fun with it. Just because we're 2 years into the program now, just to create a little bit of excitement, the last two quarters, we did something that we called our $15,000 tax-free payday. And so that's exactly what we did. The highest scoring departments in each of the categories that we measure across the company, those employees had the ability to have their name put in the drawing. So you had essentially a 1 in 250 or 1 in 300 mm-hmm. chance of winning $15,000 mm-hmm. tax-free.
Right.
And the first winner was a woman in Natchez who fainted dead away when we called her name. But the next day, they had a limo pick her up at her house, and they did red carpet into the property and roses and a big ceremony. Mm. And it's amazing that just because of the camaraderie that exists and the relationships
right.
that exist with our customers are involved in it as well.
Mm-hmm.
So the second time when we did it, our winner was from our Bettendorf casino, and they warned me in advance, because we kind of do this as a live broadcast.
Right.
They warned me in advance that because the winning department was the casino department, that they were broadcasting it live on the entire casino floor, and all of our customers,
yeah.
because they're such good friends with our employees, all of our customers were waiting with bated breath as well.
Yeah.
So it just so happened that the one property that was streaming it live, you know, we actually had the winner from there. But those are the kind of things that I think, you know, kind of make us a unique organization.
Yeah.
That we have the employees who like to have that kind of fun, not only with each other but with our customers, and that we celebrate that at the corporate level as well.
Yeah. Okay. Great. Now you've been able to maintain your growth here with these two new licenses. But there's still a few jurisdictions out there that are looking to get into the market from Massachusetts to Texas, maybe even Illinois again.
Mm-hmm.
You know, does Isle have any aspirations in those states?
Well, we're always looking for opportunities. You know, for us, it has to be the right opportunity.
Right.
As I said, in both Cape Girardeau and Nemacolin, we were able to get in at a very competitive mm-hmm. multiple, so it made a lot of sense for us. It depends on the jurisdiction, and it depends on the opportunity.
Right.
You know, we're probably not a candidate to go build, you know, $1 billion or $2 billion resort in Massachusetts,
sure.
depending on mm-hmm. what shakes out up there. We could be a candidate to manage,
mm-hmm.
These properties. Our management team is very deep and very broad.
Right.
We have professionals at the corporate level that have run or managed very large-scale destination resorts
right.
in Atlantic City or Las Vegas.
Sure.
So certainly, managing a larger property is something that we bring a tremendous amount of professional competence and capability to.
Mm-hmm.
But I think it all depends on what happens.
Right, right.
We still have our Isle Gaming Management Division.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we look for management contract opportunities. You know, we believe, based on the infrastructure that we have built here at corporate, whether it be our marketing professionals or our technology platform or our development platform, that there's an awful lot that we bring to the table where we can introduce management contracts, which basically give us, obviously, the opportunity to increase our profits, without having to, add a lot of overhead. Mm-hmm. What we found, though, over the last couple of years, Isle Gaming Management was formed to take advantage of distressed asset opportunities. They are fewer and farther between us as companies and individual properties have emerged from bankruptcy or restructuring. And unfortunately, what we found is that, it ended up being a pretty heated and competitive bidding process for these properties. And, there were a few that we walked away from or withdrew our names from just because it didn't make sense for the amount of effort and management time that we would have to invest for a relatively small return.
Right. Okay. You've got an operation in Florida where they're talking about the integrated resorts in Miami and, and elsewhere in the state. Do Isle and the other racinos have a seat at that table?
Yes, we do.
Yeah.
Yes, we do. We were very successful. First off, I have to give our corporate lobbying and legislative team and quite frankly, the South Florida Paramutual Coalition a tremendous amount of credit for making the legislators in Florida understand how important the paramutual industry was and getting them to lower the tax rate to a much more competitive level. That makes for a healthier industry.
Sure.
So I think that kind of the dialogue started in the last legislative session and then continued into the most recent. As a result of the relationships that we built during the last legislative session, however, when it came time for us to make the team understand how important it was that we get parity, they did make certain that we had that seat at the table. So to the extent that these resorts will be introduced in the state, and that's a long way off, and I'm sure, many debates away, to the extent that those resorts are introduced, we would have parity for whatever is introduced in our county. So assuming that in Miami-Dade, what they're proposing right now, and this is, way out there.
Sky right now,
But what they're proposing right now is a sliding scale based on investment. I believe that over $2 billion in investment, your tax rate would be 10%. You have to think in Miami-Dade, you would end up with a $2 billion integrated resort, which means that our tax rate at the property would go down to 10%, whatever theirs was, and that we would get full parity in terms of games.
Sure.
So I think that is helpful. Now, what the likelihood of that is, who knows? it is obviously complicated, by the relationship with the Seminoles, and the agreement that they have. It is complicated by a whole variety of factors beyond that. But, we believe that, first off, we believe that we have a great property there and a lot of potential and over 200 acres of land that is still sitting there, very, very valuable land that is still sitting there that can be developed.
Sure.
So, we like our future in Florida.
No question about it. How about internationally? We just saw Pinnacle buy into the Vietnam project for what I thought was a pretty reasonable amount of money, $95 million. With countries like Taiwan and South Korea and Japan and the Philippines and either looking to add gaming or expand gaming, do you have any thoughts about that?
Well, remember we've spent the last couple of years extracting ourselves.
That, right? But those were situations that weren't very favorable.
From our international operations as I like to tell my board at this point, we are proudly domestic. I think that you really have to look at what your opportunities are and the bandwidth that you have as far as your organization is concerned. And when you're looking at 15 domestic properties and building two more at this point and looking for management contract opportunities in the United States, looking at some deferred maintenance CapEx opportunities that we have at the existing properties, I think there's enough to keep us busy in the United States.
Okay.
So I don't see us looking at any of those opportunities.
Okay. One opportunity that may be available to gaming everywhere would be the online gaming market.
Mm-hmm.
I've been following that very closely, attended a couple of conferences last month, and I don't see it as being very happening very quickly here, but you've got to be thinking about that down the road. Are you planning some strategy for that area?
Yeah, I think that Gary Loveman and Caesars have done a great job in terms of framing that discussion and kind of taking the lead on that. Clearly, with World Series of Poker and the Caesars brand, they
right.
believe that they have a global opportunity, mm-hmm. and are much more active in terms of trying to, you know, number one, look at it from introduction of a bill at the federal level, mm-hmm. and then, you know, looking for state opportunities, you know, where they may exist. I think that Gary is very accurate when he sits there and says 20 years from now we'll think it's crazy that we were
right.
ever having this debate, but if you ask me 2 years from now whether we'll see a bill,
mm-hmm.
you know, who knows.
Right.
If you look at what our elected officials in Washington are dealing with right now as far as the debt ceiling and
mm-hmm.
everything else, this is not a priority.
Right.
You know, hopefully, you know, when we get on the other side of this debate, and probably not until after the 2012 election,
right.
I really don't think that you're going to see this as anything that anyone's willing to waste any political capital on.
Mm-hmm.
You may see a little push intrastate.
Right.
You know, you've seen, you know, little flurries of activity here and there,
mm-hmm.
whether it was New Jersey or Iowa or Florida. There may be some opportunities there that we would certainly position ourselves to
mm-hmm.
take advantage of. We have had some incoming expressions of interest
mm-hmm.
from global operators who recognize the power of the Lady Luck brand.
Sure.
You know,
mm-hmm.
it's ubiquitous and recognized all over the world, and we do believe that there's an opportunity for us to do something with that platform going forward. But it's not anything that we're investing in a tremendous amount of resources
okay.
in right now.
Okay. But, yeah, there's a possible, you know, with
mm-hmm.
the Florida and the Iowa, you know.
Yeah, I mean, we have the number one poker room in the state in Pompano.
Right.
And you know, since the changes in the legislation last year,
mm-hmm.
You know, it's just gotten even you know, stronger and
right.
you know,
and at
more
one point,
profitable.
As I recall, they were talking about the poker rooms being headquartered at the racetracks.
There's all kinds of things
yeah.
that they've been
mm-hmm.
talking about and, you know, different structures and you know, we just kind of watch and see where our opportunities
right.
may lie
okay.
and to the extent that it's something that we could take advantage of. You know, we have a team that's looking at it. You know, we're kind of looking at, you know, again, as far as our social media platform and you know, looking at our mobile
mm-hmm.
opportunities. You know, we do believe that play for fun games, whether it be, you
right.
know, through our website or mobile,
mm-hmm.
we do think that is something that you know, we will be exploring sooner rather than later,
mm-hmm.
just so that you build those relationships with customers that,
sure.
you know, to the extent that a legitimate profit opportunity comes along, that you're in a better position to take advantage of it.
Great. All right, just one more question. Let's blue sky the next 5 years. You've got, and let's assume that the economy is going to gradually go up the way we hope it will. Where would you like to see Isle at the end of that period of time?
Well, I think that again, it was a very difficult last couple of years for all of us
mm-hmm.
as far as the issues with the economy is concerned. But I know that we emerged a stronger and smarter company.
Mm-hmm.
Not that we were ever fat and happy,
yeah.
because I think that we've always done a good job at paying attention at you know, running competitive margins. But when you are forced to make very hard decisions, and you are forced to make decisions in terms of pulling cost out of these properties that do not impact the customer experience, and you have the strength not to, you know, to add those costs, you know, back in going forward.
Right.
That you will see, you know, flow-throughs in the industry. I think that we will benefit that as a, you know, from that as a company. I think as the baby boomers, who are the core of our business, do begin to feel a little bit more comfortable when the cops in the rearview mirror,
right.
when they do begin to feel a little bit more comfortable, you're going to see them starting to return, maybe not to their previous behavior and you know, the levels that they used to visit our properties or what they used to spend. When they visited us, but certainly greater than it is right now. I think certainly our success in pursuing the last two licenses in Missouri and in Pennsylvania has helped us, you know, tremendously in terms of our credibility
mm-hmm.
with the investment community, that they saw that we were, as a company, able to compete for those licenses and to win what will be, you know, what we believe, two very profitable licenses that create great value for shareholders. I think that the financial engineering that Dale Black and his team have done in terms of the balance sheet and the equity offering, I think that removes an overhang,
mm-hmm.
You know, from the company, that people will take a little look at us going forward.
Right.
I do believe that because Lady Luck is a ubiquitous brand and because conversions are so easy, that there are opportunities for us to look at one-off properties. We'd like to say that our sweet spot's between the Alleghenies and the Rockies, and you know, there's 100 or so you know, potential properties that are either operated by larger companies that, as the spread between the bid and the ask gets a little bit more realistic, they're going to get tired of doing P&L reviews out in the middle of nowhere, and we specialize in that. We're very good at that. You know, and or properties that, that are either, you know, still slightly distressed or may become so depending on competitive situations, or that are owned by entrepreneurs that have just had it. You know, we think that there would be opportunities for us to buy those properties and to add them to the Lady Luck portfolio. You know, a lot of companies look at this and say, you know, it's not sexy, it's not glamorous, but, you know, if you look at the average Lady Luck, you know, property in the 8 to 12 million range, you know, if you can pick up a handful of them and you know, continue to look for opportunities to buy them an attractive multiple like we did with Vicksburg, it really gives you the ability not only to continue to add very profitable properties at a good price, it also gives you the ability to build a nationwide distribution network. So it kind of goes back, I think you and I were talking about this last time, you know, it kind of goes back to that trucker in Caruthersville who loved the Lady Luck conversion that we did there so much that he stopped the general manager on the way out and said, I'm driving, you know, up country, cross country, going north, going, where's the next one of these? So to the extent that, that you can build that kind of experience for customers that, I mean, a brand is shorthand. I mean, a brand is an easy way for you to sit there and say, I know what I'm getting from this. I know the quality that I'm getting. I know the experience that I'm getting. To the extent that, that we have the ability to spread the Lady Luck brand, you know, across the Midwest or you know, other areas where we may have the opportunity to do that, I think it's a lot of fun. And if you look at what it's cost us, I mean, you know, the most expensive conversion that we did was Caruthersville, which was slightly less than $6 million. We did the conversion at Lady Luck Blackhawk, the old Colorado Central Station, for less than $1 million signage. In terms of what the capital you know, plan was, but the more significant change was, you know, putting the Lady Luck operating plan in place, which was creating all the fun, and you know, we've got customers running around up there with cowbells and pink pink flamingos, and I think now they're giving away gnomes. You know, it sounds crazy, but it's that kind of fun shtick that our customers love and their employees embrace, and it really creates the kind of opportunity. Or the kind of experience that, you know, when customers are making a purchasing decision, you kind of go back to Atlantic City and, you know, you look at all these properties stacked up, you know, one on top of each other on the boardwalk, you know, there are a bunch of used car lots, you know, so what is the differentiation of the experience from one to the other? What's the difference in the value proposition? How do you cut through that and say to a customer, you know, come here because you're going to have more fun. And we think that that's what we've done with the Lady Luck brand.
Okay, great. Well, we think the company's doing great, and you know, hopefully we'll shed some light on it so people can really see what's happening here, because you know, this is some of the most exciting things that are happening in the industry, and even though it's not sexy and big and really people listen to, I think it's really going to be something that, that's going to make the difference in the industry over the next few
years. We specialize in blocking and tackling and have cornered the market on fun, so thank you for the opportunity to tell the story.
Thanks for joining us on the Global Gaming Business Podcast. If you want to learn more about the issues discussed today or anything about the gaming industry, visit our website at ggbmagazine.com. For weekly updates on the industry, subscribe to GGB News, the only weekly e-news magazine dedicated to the breaking news of the gaming business. To see a sample issue, visit ggbnews.com. That's it for today. Hope you enjoyed the interview, and we'll see you next week on the Global Gaming Business Podcast. Make a cue.